Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. On October 18th, 2003, 20-year-old Rachel Good was doing what young people in small towns do. She was hanging out with her friends in a parking lot. Rachel and her friends chatted in the Elkton Volunteer Fire Department parking lot until it got dark. At that point, Rachel decided it was time to call it a night, and she drove home. Though her car was later found there, Rachel was never seen again. At first, no one knew what could have happened to the pregnant young woman. They wondered if she ran away due to her legal problems. But soon, a more sinister story would emerge. One of a secret relationship and police misconduct in the small Central Virginia town. Now, nearly 19 years later, there is only one suspect in Rachel's disappearance, but no charges have ever been filed. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Rachel Good. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. All right, so here's the deal. Ethan is home right now. He exists as a person in my life.
For now. Yes.
For now. This is a temporary state of being for my lovely husband, as he's going to be traveling pretty heavily for the next month or so.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is focus on some underreported cases. The idea was that these would be shorter episodes so I could write them faster. But of course, that has not proven to be the case so far. And this episode is not any shorter than anything else I've written.
Awesome. Awesome.
So the plan is not going great, but we're still going to try to get a few more out before he leaves. But either way, I am excited to be bringing attention to these cases that haven't really been covered and haven't been talked about as much. I found out about Rachel's story while browsing cases on Uncovered, which is an amazing website dedicated to centralizing information on cold cases.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. And so it's, you know, unsolved missing persons cases and unsolved homicides. Mm-hmm. And it's great. So like, it's a really nice website. And so you can search up people and cases and contribute information, you know, do research. And it's basically just crowdsourcing and getting all of this stuff together.
I wonder if any law enforcement goes on there and uses that as an aid.
I don't know, but I mean, they should. It's really great. And so that's another thing that I'm doing, is I'm trying to contribute to some of the cases that I've already researched for this show.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't have a lot of the centralized information. So Rosemary Bly, for instance, you know, who we just covered a few weeks ago, they just didn't have a lot of that info on the site. So I'm working on her case file right now.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. But it's a lot of work. It's more than I thought it was. Yeah. But, you know, it's important, I think.
Well, I promise I won't go looking on the website and spoil all of your scripts.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, so again, I was just kind of browsing through one day and I just decided to search Virginia cases because I was curious, and that's where we live. And I found Rachel Good's case. She disappeared from Rockingham County in 2003. Rockingham County is the home of James Madison University, from which I graduated that same year.
Right.
But by October, when this happened, I was living in neighboring Augusta County. So like literally the next county over. The point is, you know, these are still very small areas. Like we're not talking bustling cities here. And I had never heard of Rachel or her disappearance. Mm. And this case, the criminal case, is also seemingly completely stalled right now as of this recording. So I would really love to get this information out there in hopes of jumpstarting anything that could possibly get this woman some justice.
Is it stalled like Baltimore County does, where they just put it on a shelf and say, meh?
I mean, kind of, yeah. And we'll get into why that is. We're not talking about Baltimore, which is a huge place with a lot of resources. Elkton is just a very teeny tiny town. So that's certainly part of it. But it also doesn't have murders and disappearances happening constantly either, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So limited resources, but also limited crime.
Well, now I'm curious to get into the case.
Yeah, so that's what we are going to do now. Rachel Nicole Good was born on October 6, 1983, to Carrie Good and Brenda Berry in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And that is how little information is out there on this case. The Charlie Project doesn't even have her date of birth. Like, and the Charlie Project is where I always go to for those vital statistics, like parent names, date of birth, things like that, you know, age of disappearance. And she didn't even have the date of birth. So I did find it from court records. But what I was able to find out from different newspaper articles is that Rachel was Brenda and Carrie's first child, and her brother Adam followed a few years later. Carrie, her father, was a truck driver, so while he says he wasn't a bad father, he does admit that he was gone a lot. His and Brenda's marriage ended badly around 1990, and they were married for quite a while. They apparently got married in the late 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were married for a long time, but again, it just did end badly. Brenda eventually remarried to a man named Mike Brown. According to Carrie, it was not a good situation for his children. In 2015, he told reporter Chris Slater, quote, "Rachel called me on many a night, not once or twice, but many a night. I would ask what's wrong, and she would say, Mama's new husband took everything out of my room. I'm sleeping on the floor, and there's nothing in the fridge to eat," end quote.
Well, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. And this is, of course, just according to the ex-husband,
sure.
Right? You know, Brenda and Mike have, of course, not spoken publicly about these allegations, so we do have to take them with a grain of salt. But as Rachel got older, Carrie says that she fell in with a bad crowd. He said that there were days where, like, he didn't really know who she was hanging out with or really where she was, things like that. And as often happens in these cases, she became pregnant as a teenager. At the time of her disappearance, when she was just 20 years old, she already had 3 children.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I don't know the ages of all 3. I do know that her youngest son was only 5 months old when she disappeared.
Wow. I was going to jump in there and try and defend the quote-unquote bad crowd. Just because she was staying out late and she, you know, accidentally got pregnant doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad crowd, but I don't know, 3 times?
Yeah, and apparently
as a teenager, like,
yeah, it was with 3 different men from what I can see. It was 2 sons and a daughter. And I only think it was with 3 different, because the kids do all have different last names. But I'm not, like, saying this to pass judgment on her at all.
No,
I mean,
no.
My dad has 5 children with 3 different women, so, like,
yeah.
I mean, what am I going to say, you know? But her relationships do come into the story, so that's why we need to talk about it. So even though she was young, Rachel was described by everyone who knew her as a good mom. You know, she very much cared about her children. She was also described as a free spirit who never met a stranger. One of her friends, Danielle Doval, said that Rachel was the type of person who would get into a 30-minute conversation with someone at the gas station. Which, like, I mean, that's my worst nightmare, honestly. But I feel like, not that you would do that, but you're just one of those guys who just loves talking to Uber drivers. So I did think of you.
Not always.
After Brenda and Carrie's divorce, Brenda moved to Cremora, which I've never heard of at all, even though it's in Augusta County, like where I lived. I've never heard of this town. Mm. But so it is close, though. Like I said, Augusta's the next county over, so she still stayed in the area. Rachel attended nearby Fort Defiance High School, where she was seemingly well-liked and, you know, had a pretty average experience. But I'm not sure if she graduated, because, again, she did have her first child while she was in high school. So I'm not sure what happened after that. Everything I've seen said that she attended Fort Defiance. I've never seen anything definitive that she graduated from Fort Defiance.
Yeah, well, it's also, I don't know how it is now, but it's important to note, back then, at least where I went to school, which was in Pennsylvania, if you got pregnant, you were moved to a different school.
Yeah, and that, I don't know about down there either, but that happened up here a lot as well. Not 100% of the time, but a lot of the times it did happen here. So yeah, I don't know. That's kind of all the information I have on that. But after she left high school, the mother of three struggled to find her way in the world. She apparently worked as a telemarketer for a while, which she excelled at since she loved talking to strangers.
Yeah, right. That's perfect.
Yeah. But she had some legal troubles as well. A search through the Stanton General District Court system turned up a charge for obtaining money under false pretenses filed on May 10th, 2002. This case was continued until December of that year, with the final status being released on summons. But before that, she was charged with failure to appear in July and then again in October. And this is all 2002, the year before she went missing.
Stemming from the one charge.
Right.
Yeah.
In 2003, she had charges in Rockingham County Circuit Court. On July 1st, 2003, Rachel was charged with uttering, forgery, and obtaining services by fraud. And, you know, uttering is one of those charges that I've seen, and like I've never really known what it has meant. And I've never bothered to look it up, but I figured I should now.
What'd you come up with?
Okay. So according to HamptonRoadsDefense.com, quote, forgery involves making a false writing, which if true, would be of some legal effect. Uttering is the assertion by words or action that a writing which one knows to be forged is valid. End quote. So it's kind of like,
wow, that's got to be hard to prove.
Yeah. So, well, but it's kind of like the difference between libel and slander, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So like slander is verbally saying something you know not to be true. Libel is writing it down, right? So it's kind of the same thing. So like forgery is writing, you know, is writing fraud, in like forging a check.
Right.
Uttering is saying like, oh no, this check is totally mine. I've got the money in the bank. It's totally fine. Don't worry about it.
Still hard to prove.
Yeah, for sure. Rachel disappeared before she had her day in court for these charges. So in August of 2004, the status on these were nolle prosequi, which I don't speak Latin, so I'm sorry if I butchered that. But according to the Legal Information Institute, it, quote, directly translates to not wish to prosecute. Nolle prosequi is a legal notice or entry of record that the prosecutor or plaintiff has decided to abandon the prosecution or lawsuit, end quote.
Nolle pros.
All right, you know what?
Sorry, but to shorten,
but you said nolle pros,
yes,
which is the abbreviation,
because that's what dumb cops like me say.
Exactly,
they say nolle pros
because you don't know if it's prosequi. I don't know. You don't speak Latin.
That's true. I don't. But
nolle pros. Okay,
yeah. Or you can say nolle pros. Sometimes cops will say that because again we're ignorant and we don't know Latin either, but it's the nolle is how you actually pronounce it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Basically what that means is that by this time, Rachel had been gone for nearly a year and she was presumed by the police to have been murdered. So the prosecutor, you know, elected not to proceed. Like they needed to clear the docket. It wasn't,
it's not a huge charge.
Yeah,
so like let's move on.
Exactly.
If she comes back, they can probably charge her again.
Right. But like nobody really cared that much, I don't think, you know?
Yeah. For passing bad checks?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if it was bad checks. Well,
yeah. Okay. Fair. Forgery.
Right.
And uttering.
But again, not the worst thing in the world. So like I said, police did by that point think that she had been a victim of a homicide. So let's talk about Rachel's presumptive murder. When I read about the investigation into Rachel's disappearance, my jaw literally dropped. And this is when I decided that we had to cover this case because I felt absolutely feral after reading about it.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. So in the immortal words of Samuel L. Jackson in Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts. Rachel was last seen around 7:30 p.m. on October 18th, 2003, after hanging out with friends in the parking lot across the street from the Elkton Volunteer Fire Department. Rachel told friends that she was heading home, and her car was later found there, which I mentioned in the intro.
At her house. Her car was found at her house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The next day, Rachel's best friend contacted her mother, Rachel's mother, and told her that they couldn't find Rachel. So I don't know if they had like plans or what the situation was, what made the best friend freak out so quickly. But she did. And Brenda, her mom, and Rachel's brother, Adam, decided to report her missing to the police.
And what time of day was that? Do we know?
That they reported her to the police? I don't know what time of day. I just know that it was the next
following day.
Mm-hmm.
So we're assuming
less than 24 hours.
Yeah, 12 to 15 hours later.
Probably, yeah. Okay. According to a 2007 article in the Daily News Record, Harrisonburg's newspaper, when Brenda Brown reported her daughter's disappearance to the Elkton Police Department in 2003, she says the officer who took her statement couldn't stop shaking.
Interesting.
Like, yeah.
Like nervous shaking or?
Well, she said, quote, "I have never seen anyone shake like that. He could barely hold his ink pen in his hand and he only wrote a couple of lines," end quote.
I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, I don't think she really did either, honestly, because out of all the things you're expecting, that is probably not on the list.
I'm just wondering whether it was nerves or whether like maybe it was a newer officer and he was nervous taking a first report like this or.
Right. Because again, Elkton, Virginia does not have a ton of missing persons, right? You know, this is not common there.
Or if it's a bigger picture issue, like maybe he was an alcoholic or something. I don't know. I shouldn't throw out accusations like that.
No.
But I just don't know why else somebody would be shaking like that other than being nervous.
Right. So we will find out.
Okay.
The officer who took this report was a man named Adam Williams. He came across as a caring officer who was empathetic toward Brenda, a mother who is going through every parent's worst nightmare. He told Brenda that if she ever needed anything, she could call him and that he would help in any way that he could. So Brenda, I mean, I don't want to say she must have been feeling pretty great because obviously she's in a nightmare. But we've talked about a lot of cases in which officers were not nearly as interested or willing to help.
Right. At least she feels like she's got the support.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, so it seems at this point that she's in a much better position than other parents of missing adults. Right. Like she has this officer who is saying like, listen, I care about this. I want to help you.
Yeah. He's not saying she's an adult. She can leave whenever she wants.
Right.
And, you know, we'll wait X number of hours or whatever.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like there's anything like that. And if this were Dateline, and if I were Keith Morrison, I would have a pithy remark about this. But it is not, and I am not, so I will just say that this was actually very fucked. At the time of Rachel's disappearance, Adam Williams was 22 years old. He was also, you're going to love this, the Elkton Police Department's lead investigator.
At 22.
Yep.
Okay. Not judging anybody on age. Just he couldn't have been on the job for that long.
Well, but keep in mind, too, that you got your job after college.
Right.
Most of these cops got their jobs after high school.
I don't think you can carry a gun in law enforcement until you're 21.
Oh, no, you definitely can. All right. I was starting to doubt my very emphatic response. So we paused recording and we actually did look it up. And from what I can tell, there isn't a statewide age requirement at all. It looks like it comes down to the jurisdiction. So many of them, if not most, are 21, but there are some that will accept 18-year-olds.
That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, but I agree. I certainly do not want an 18-year-old police officer. What we couldn't find was Elkton's specific requirements. They didn't have that information on their website. But what they did have, or what they do have currently, is every one of their police officers named on their website because there are only four of them. There is a sergeant, a corporal, and two full-time officers. Then there are 4 part-time officers and then the chief of police.
So very small police department.
Right. And this is in 2022. Who knows what it was in 2003?
Well, interesting that you say that.
Oh, did you look something up?
So I found an article published October 11th, 2021, talking about how the town of Elkton is expanding its police force by 1 officer.
Oh.
So before 2021, there were only 3.
Wow. Yeah. So that would be the sergeant, the corporal, and then one full-time officer.
Right.
Right. So again, that's 2021. And the population in that general area has grown a lot since I was in college there. I mean, I can only imagine what it was at the time.
But regardless, either way, so we have...
So we have this 22-year-old guy, Adam Williams, who had been working there presumably from between 1 to 4 years,
right?
Let's say.
Yeah.
Who was the lead investigator.
Yeah. And I'm not judging anybody by age, because at 22, I was a CYS worker.
Right.
Like, not very happy in my position, but, right. You know, age is a number.
You know, you got to think. So if, let's just assume at that time, there were only 3 officers, the sergeant, the corporal, the officer, presumably he was the officer, right? So
right.
It makes
sense. And if
sense
he's the only officer, then he's got to be the lead investigator, because there's nobody else.
Exactly. So that makes sense, I think, a little bit more. So because Adam was the lead investigator, he, of course, took the lead on Rachel's case. During this time, Rachel's family witnessed him entering her apartment and collecting evidence, which totally normal. Like,
sounds good.
Yeah, like definitely what you would want him to be doing at that point, except for one thing. A few days after she went missing, when her family was kind of, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and kind of looking around on their own, they found some letters that indicated that Rachel and Adam Williams were in a romantic relationship.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
To further bolster this claim, we need to rewind back to a few days before Rachel went missing. She had called her father and asked to borrow $100. He agreed to give her the money and said that she wouldn't even have to pay him back. But there was a catch. He wanted to see her in church that Sunday. So, like, a very dad thing to do, you know? Rachel agreed, and on October 12th, she attended church with her father, Carrie. After the service, the two were just chatting, and she said to him, quote, "Daddy, I'm dating a policeman. You want to hear him?" End quote. Carrie said, quote, "She pulled her phone out, and I heard his voice on a voicemail. Rachel, how you doing? Just wanted to say hey." End quote. The man on the voicemail was, of course, Adam Williams.
So, not an inappropriate thing that he is dating her. However, inappropriate that he didn't recuse himself from the investigation immediately.
Right. And I get that he might have been the only officer, but that does not matter.
No, yeah. You,
in this case.
You have to come out and say,
yeah.
Like, especially if, like, he had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Like, he's got to be like, hey, Corporal, Sarge, Chief.
Yeah.
I was dating this girl, seeing this girl, whatever. You got to pull me from this and get somebody else to do it.
Exactly. But he did not. But so anyway, so going back to that, you know, a few days before the disappearance to that church trip, Carrie believes that, you know, based on his conversation with her, that Rachel and Adam had been dating for about 3 or 4 months by this time. Now, Carrie didn't know at the time that this guy's name was Adam Williams. You know, like, she didn't tell him about that because Rachel and Adam weren't public with their relationship. And my first thought when I read that was that maybe he met her, like, while he was on the job.
Could be, yeah.
You know, and, like, he was trying to keep it on the down low because of that, because that can be kind of shady.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, maybe they did. Maybe that is where they met. I honestly have no idea. But we do know that Rachel has had interactions with law enforcement. So it is certainly a possibility.
Yeah. Or maybe they just weren't ready to just have it out there. I mean, maybe there is no. Okay. You're looking at me like you have more information. So, okay.
I do.
All right.
That is not the case. So maybe they did meet while he was on the job. Maybe they didn't, you know. Elkton, again, is a super small town. And as somebody who was also trying to date in that area at the same time, like, that dating pool is small. Like, that pool is on sale at Walmart for $9.99. It is tiny. So to me, it is just as likely that they met at Applebee's or whatever. But regardless of how they met, there was a bigger reason that Adam wanted to keep the relationship quiet. Can you guess?
He's married.
He is married.
Oh boy.
Was married. Do not think he's currently married. When I was going through this, I obviously did not know how Adam viewed the relationship. I have since gotten a little bit more information that I'll kind of go into at the very end. You know, so, but I didn't know, like, if he considered it to be a real relationship or if it was just a fling, you know, if this is just a, yeah, I'm just having sex with some girl, or if I'm going to leave my wife and we'll start a life together. That was incredibly clear. But either way, it didn't really matter because the situation was getting extremely complicated. Rachel was pregnant.
With his, presumably with his kid?
Yep.
Well, he just moved up to suspect number one.
So Rachel Good, a mother of three with as yet unresolved legal issues, is in a secret relationship with a married police officer. She gets pregnant and then disappears.
Yeah, it doesn't look good for him.
Exactly. But because this is such a small town and no one in a position of power allegedly knew about this relationship, her boyfriend is the lead investigator on the case and is the first person to perform searches on her home.
Bye-bye evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it took several days for Rachel's family to figure out what was going on with them. 4 days from what it seems like. But, you know, 4 days is 4 days. Like, how much damage could have been done in those 4 days?
Yeah, a lot.
Right. Like, what could have been covered up in those 4 days? Rachel's purse was recovered from her home, but her cell phone was not. Mm. What's more is that, so once the Good family found this out, they obviously took it to Williams' superiors at the Elkton Police Department, and they did remove him from the case after 4 days. And they asked the Virginia State Police to take over. But the State Police didn't officially take the case over until day 10.
Hmm.
So this woman is missing. She's pregnant. Her married boyfriend is leading the investigation for 4 days. And then for 6 days.
Nothing.
Apparently.
No searches were conducted.
Nothing that I could publicly find. I have no idea. All I know is that day 4, he was taken off. Day 10, Virginia State Police came on.
Wow.
Unfortunately, not much is known about the actual investigation into Rachel's disappearance. You know, what searches were done or anything like that. But a theory quickly emerged, and it's exactly what you would think.
That Adam did it?
Yeah.
And then covered it up, and since he was the lead investigator, had 4 days to tamper with evidence?
Yeah.
That maybe he couldn't have gotten to before?
Exactly. According to some of Rachel's family members, when she told Adam that she was pregnant, he wanted her to get an abortion. He even gave her the money for it, which I read was like around $1,700. Rachel not only did not get the abortion, but she threatened to tell Adam's wife about them and took the money and spent it on other things.
Okay.
So she was putting his feet to the fire at this point. And clearly, you know, things were not great between them in October of 2003. Remember when I said that no one in a position of authority allegedly knew about this relationship?
Uh-huh.
All right, so you're a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know what you think about this wording.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Because when you're a police officer or a lawyer, you know, talking about anything in the criminal justice system, the wording is very important.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to be very careful with how you say stuff publicly.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
At the time, when asked about this, Police Chief Richard Pullen said that he had, quote, no official knowledge, end quote, of the relationship.
What does official knowledge mean?
Honestly,
why did you have to throw that in there?
Yeah. Yeah. No official knowledge. And not to make light of this, but when I read that, the first thing I thought of was the love contract between Jan and Michael on The Office. When they started dating, you know, he was like, we need to tell HR, we need to have a love contract. And, you know, like, that's what, like, is that what official knowledge of a relationship was? Was he supposed to submit something in writing?
I don't know. I don't think that's real.
Like, so, okay, so let's say, all right, not even a civilian, because your department, you all love to, you know, date and marry each other. What would constitute one of your superiors saying that they had official knowledge of a relationship? Like, what would have to happen?
I don't know.
Because, like, that's just not something that is real, right? I mean,
yeah, you don't, that's, nobody talks that way.
Nobody talks that way unless they're trying to cover their ass.
Yeah.
And saying that as a police chief, I did not know that the officer under me was having this relationship. However, as a dude who lives in Elkton who went out drinking with the boys,
yeah,
maybe something slipped.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm taking from this.
I'm just confused as to why he even said officially. Why didn't he just say he had no knowledge?
Because my guess would be, again, if somebody else who was at that Applebee's said, wait, no, like, I saw them drinking and talking and he did know about it, like, that way he could say, oh, wait, no, well, yeah, but, like, that was on our personal time. That was not official. That was not boss subordinate talk,
I guess.
And, you know, let me tell you, just for the record, Rachel's dad does not at all believe that the chief did not know about this. And so, from his perspective, he knew about it and still allowed Adam Williams to be the lead investigator on this case. So it sounds like Rachel's family was running a bit of a parallel investigation at this time. In addition to finding the letters, Rachel's dad, Carrie, contacted Adam directly a few weeks after the disappearance. He asked Adam to meet him at a McDonald's to talk everything through. Adam agreed, but according to Carrie, he never showed. I don't know what Adam Williams' wife was thinking about all of this at the time, but Adam saw the writing on the wall. In November of 2003, about a month after Rachel's disappearance, he submitted his letter of resignation to the Elkton Police Department, effective January 2004. So, like, yeah, this guy was like, okay, I know this looks bad, but hear me out. I need Christmas money.
All right.
So around that time, I think it was right before he put in the letter of resignation, police searched his home. And
Virginia State Police.
Right. And in December of 2003, Williams was put on administrative leave until his resignation took effect. So he was permitted to stay employed until January of 2004. They paid him. They just didn't let him
work the streets.
Right.
Mm. Interesting.
As soon as his resignation did take effect, he hightailed it out of Virginia and ended up moving down to Louisiana. And police just said bye, basically.
No way of, I mean, one would assume that they had a way of contacting
sure.
him.
Sure.
But yeah, wow. All right.
Yeah. Adam Williams left and he wasn't even officially named as a suspect, though authorities did reportedly tell Rachel's family off the record that he was. In September of 2004, 11 months after her disappearance, Rockingham County Commonwealth's attorney, Marcia Garst, convened a special grand jury to look into Rachel's disappearance. On one hand, this was almost a year after her disappearance, which seems like a long time.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Garst seemed confident, telling the Daily News leader, quote, "We have significant evidence and we want to move the case along," end quote. She even boldly said that an indictment was, quote, certain.
This is all, we're assuming the evidence that she has is what the Virginia State Police provided her.
Right. But spoiler alert, it was anything but certain. By November of 2004, 2 months later, there was no indictment, but Rachel's family knew in their hearts that she wasn't coming back. In an effort to come together and get not closure, but some sort of forward momentum in their lives, because, you know, when somebody goes missing, you're just basically stuck, right? So they decided to hold a memorial service for her and her unborn child. Friends and family gathered at the Blue Ridge Church of Christ, where they told stories about Rachel and read poems. Lily Berry, Rachel's grandmother, told reporters, quote, "The people who turned out here really did a lot for our spirits. We needed this," end quote. After that, not much happened with the case. By the fifth anniversary in 2008, the special grand jury had been reconvened and had heard more testimony, but prosecutors were still refusing to publicly name a suspect.
5 years?
Yeah.
And they still can't decide whether they're going to take this to trial or not?
Nope.
Sounds to me like they don't have enough evidence.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, or they were just afraid. And, you know, we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. In 2010, 7 years had passed since Rachel had last been seen. So her family did have her declared legally dead. So in Virginia, like many other states, 7 years is the time period that you have to wait. In October of 2012, Rachel's father filed a wrongful death suit against the town of Elkton, former police chief Richard Pullen, and Adam Williams. It was like a $5 million suit or something like that. And in February of 2014, lawyers representing Elkton asked for the suit to be dismissed. It was. And Elkton and Chief Pullen were officially off the hook.
It was dismissed based on what?
You know, I actually couldn't find that. Like, so the court records just only have the very basic information, you know, dates and motions and stuff. They don't have reasoning or anything like that. And then the articles didn't say why either.
I guess it's safe to assume that because Adam Williams was never officially named as a suspect and there's no hard evidence that the chief actually knew about the relationship, there was nothing that could be proven as in the wrongful death suit.
Right. And, you know, in terms of the town, okay, Williams was the lead investigator for 4 days, but as soon as this relationship was brought to the attention of, you know, his higher ups, he was taken off. Right. So I think the argument is that the town, you know, what would they have done? Like, there's nothing that they could have done to prevent this. So they can't be culpable.
Right.
But when you file a suit like this, especially against a police officer, you don't go after the police officer because they don't have any money. You go after their employers.
Right. Yeah.
So after this was dismissed, Rachel's family still went after Williams because the criminal case was not happening. And a court date was scheduled for May of 2016. At that hearing, good family attorney Brad Pollack was visibly frustrated because Adam Williams hadn't bothered to show up.
What is this court proceeding?
It's a civil, I mean, so basically after that case was dismissed, they refiled with only Adam Williams as the defendant.
Okay.
So same wrongful death, but only him. And they were only asking for $50,000 instead of $5 million.
Gotcha. And he just didn't show up.
Nope. The good family lawyer, Brad Pollack, said that he wanted the judge to hold Williams in contempt of court. Williams ended up filing for a continuance, apparently citing medical issues as like the reason why he wasn't there. And it seems at this point he was representing himself. The judge granted a continuance until September 16th. So September 16th rolls around, but this time it was Pollack who was asking for a continuance. He was having trouble gaining access to Rachel and Adam's cell phone records, which, as you can imagine, would be quite important. Not only the, you know, call logs, but also location data. But because so much time had passed, this is 2016, so we're talking, you know, nearly 13 years after the disappearance, the phone companies didn't have those records anymore.
Yeah, and technology had advanced.
Right. So
a lot.
Yeah, everything. It was just a whole new world. Yes. Right. However, the Virginia State Police had subpoenaed those records years ago during their initial investigation, but they didn't want to hand them over.
And why is that?
No idea.
Because it's still, quote unquote, an active investigation?
I guess. And so they didn't want to hand them over, to the civil case with the idea that that might hurt their criminal case, I'm assuming.
That's a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah. According to WHSV, Harrisonburg's ABC affiliate, where I used to work, shout out, quote, Virginia State Police filed a motion to quash that subpoena, which would effectively prevent Rachel Good's family from ever gaining access to the phone records they believe to be critical to this case, end quote. Unfortunately, they were never able to come to an agreement with the state police, so they ended up having to drop the lawsuit. But in 2018, they decided to try again. That June, a Rockingham County Circuit Court judge opened the door for Williams to be held liable in Rachel's death. Though Carey was still pursuing this lawsuit, he didn't care about the money. He told a reporter, quote, "All I want to know is where she's at. That's all I want so I can bring her home. I'm tired. It's been 15 years and my health ain't that good, and I want to know what happened to my daughter before I die," end quote. He went on to say, quote, "If you find out Adam Williams done it and you electrocute him, it ain't going to bring my daughter back. I just want the truth," end quote. You know, and I didn't put this in here, but like I did read, and it might have even been in the same article. He was just like, "I don't even blame Adam." He was like, "They were young. He did something stupid." If he comes and says like, "God forgive me, I did a horrible thing," he's like, "I would be inclined to forgive him. I just want to know where she is. I want to be able to tell my grandchildren where their mother is." That's all he's ever cared about. It's not about vengeance for him. It's not about money in the civil suit. He just wants to know where his only daughter is. So let's talk theories. In 2015, Carey laid his theories out to a reporter named Chris Slater. He said that over the years, they had received several tips, including one that Rachel's body was in a well in Lake Arrowhead. And I wasn't familiar with Lake Arrowhead, so I looked it up. It's a lake with a beach in nearby Luray, Virginia.
Oh, well, I know Luray.
Yeah. Now, they went down there to investigate, but found that the well had been covered up a few years before. Apparently, the home on the property also had its basement remodeled right around the time of Rachel's disappearance.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Carrie's thought on that is that she was possibly killed in the basement and then put into the well.
But what connection did Williams have with the house?
Exactly. I don't know. I don't know if there is one. Because his parents didn't live there. Like, his parents lived in Florida. Now, the more popular theory is that Adam's father helped him out. I already mentioned that Carey had contacted Adam after Rachel's disappearance, but he also contacted Adam's parents in Florida. He got in touch with Adam's mother, and she told him that Adam's father usually went up to Virginia in April or May, but in 2003, he went up in October. And apparently, he only stayed for a day. And for those of you who don't know, like, I don't know where in Florida they were, but I drove from Augusta County to Orlando, and that was about a 13-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's like central Florida. So if we're talking southern Florida, you can be talking anywhere up to like an 18-hour drive. So it's not a trip you would want to make and then turn around and return.
Yeah. And do we know when in October he came up?
It was apparently after the disappearance.
Okay.
So of this, Carey said, quote, "I think that his father orchestrated it all. If it wasn't the well, I feel like Adam said, 'Hey, Rachel, let's drive to Florida.' So they went to Florida, killed her, and threw her in the swamp with the alligators," end quote. And like, maybe that's the case, but to me, an impromptu trip to Florida in which she alerted no one and left her purse behind doesn't seem very likely.
No.
If Adam's father is involved, what seems more likely to me is that Adam killed Rachel and then called his dad to help him out afterwards. And that is exactly what the prosecution is alleging that Paul Flores did in the Kristen Smart case. Mm-hmm. The whole case against Paul Flores is that he murdered Kristen and then called his father, Ruben Flores, to help him with the body.
And so that's why they're both on trial right now for her murder. And so this sounds, the theory is that that's basically what happened here. I mentioned at the beginning that it was hard to find information on this. And, you know, there aren't even like a lot of good pictures of Rachel out on the internet. You know, there's not just a lot of information about her life in general. I was, however, able to connect with one of her friends on Facebook. So this is a guy named Chris. He asked me not to use his last name, but he was able to provide just a little bit of insight into this whole situation. He wasn't super close with Rachel, but they hung out pretty frequently, like in parking lots, you know, like you do. And he saw her just a few days before she disappeared. So he wasn't there, you know, in that night, but yeah, very close. He said that her relationship and pregnancy was known within her circle of friends, but that she was the only one who thought that they were in an actual relationship. So remember at the beginning, I was like, I don't know really how Adam felt about this. Well, according to her friend, Chris, quote, she was just a piece of tail to him, end quote. Yeah. And he went on actually to talk a little bit more about Adam. Apparently, like, he was kind of known around town as just being a creep. And he was like the type of cop who would pull women over and then like hit on them, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah. Like that kind of dude.
Yeah.
As for his theory, he agrees that Adam killed her and his dad helped cover it up. Quote, that's what me and a few others believe. I think after Adam killed her, his dad came up, got the body and took it back to Florida, and she was gator food, end quote. What this comes down to is that prosecutors are seemingly afraid to prosecute a nobody case. Virginia State Police still classify Rachel's case as open, but I don't know if it's actually being worked on. I emailed the field office that's handling this for a comment, but as of this recording, I haven't heard back from them.
Yeah, Virginia State Police are pretty tight-lipped, so I would expect that you will not hear from them.
Right. And, you know, so Carrie in another interview has said basically that he's like, the police, the prosecutors, everybody has been telling us for years that they have enough evidence to hang this guy. But, you know, he just thinks they don't want to prosecute because Rachel hasn't been found. And if the prevailing theory is correct and she was taken down to Florida, like, she likely won't be.
Oh, yeah, definitely. At this point, it's what, 19 years?
Almost, yeah. Almost it'll be 19 years in October.
Yeah, like, if that theory is right, you know, she's probably gone.
Yeah, and so I was talking to Chris about that because that was his theory at the beginning, and I was like, what are your thoughts now? And he was like, no, I believe that in my soul. And, you know, he said that there were some other kind of theories around that apparently there was a like chicken farm. Harrisonburg is the chicken capital of the world. But there's like this chicken farm and a manure pit. And there were rumors that she could have perhaps been buried there. But he's like, I never really thought that. He said, I have always thought that she was taken down to Florida. Carrie and the rest of Rachel's family wants answers, but they're willing to wait. In 2015, Carrie said, quote, I would rather take 25 years and get him than try to get him in 10 and mess up, end quote. As of now, it's been nearly 19 years, as we said, but there is some hope. I was able to find the civil court records of the lawsuit that they kind of refiled in 2018. In April of that year, Williams filed a motion to have the case dismissed, as you would expect. The judge ruled, however, that he filed this motion a day too late. He apparently had 90 days to file it. He filed it on the 91st day. And the judge was like, ooh, sorry, too late. In 2020, the plaintiffs moved for a default judgment against Williams because I think he was still not showing up to hearings. But of course, Williams did object to this. And then after that, things kind of got put on hold, probably due to COVID.
Right.
Because again, most civil cases, like nobody cared, you know?
Yeah.
The default judgment was ordered, but in April 2022, it was reversed. The last status update in the case came right after that in April, and that was a scheduling order. So as of now, the civil case is still active and will apparently finally see, you know, another hearing all these years later.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so at least there's that. But the problem is that from what I was reading, and again, you know, every state's different, but it sounds like because there haven't been criminal charges, there won't be a trial. It won't be a civil trial where they can get basically evidence introduced and things like that. It's just going to be a hearing, you know, which of course the good family is upset. Like they want a trial one way or the other. You know, they just, again, they just want answers. They don't care if it's criminal court, civil court, kangaroo court, whatever. They just want some answers. But I don't know if they're going to get it. But, you know, they're still trying to hold this guy's feet to the fire and just not letting him go off and live his life. While this is, of course, positive news, to my knowledge, the criminal case is going nowhere. So that's where we need to focus. Rockingham County and the Virginia State Police need to know that Rachel and her baby have not been forgotten. Let's hope that by getting this story out there, we can put pressure on the right people to keep moving this forward and get Rachel's family the answers they so desperately need. Rachel Good has been missing from Elkton, Virginia since October 18, 2003. Rachel is a white female with blonde hair and blue eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was 5'4" tall and 180 pounds. She's approximately 10 weeks pregnant. Rachel was 20 years old when she went missing. She would be 38 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Rachel Good, contact the Virginia State Police Bureau of Criminal Investigation Culpeper Field Office at 540-829-7400. You can see all of the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.